simplest way I sum it up is becoming better rather than bitter from your challenges. So that's like
I love that.
Yeah. Yeah. We're all like throwing quotes back at each other. We'll have a greater repertoire after this.
Welcome to the Prime Life Project podcast, a place to help you unlock your full potential, both mentally and physically, to become the best version of you. Welcome back to another episode of the Prime Life Project podcast. I'm your host, Daniel James. And today, I'm talking to one of Australia's 100 women of influence. It is going to be an absolute treat for you. So before I get started, I already know that today is going to help change your perspective on some tricky situations. So like I always say, if you take any value from today's episode, please don't forget to like and share it with a friend. Help us spread the word to help as many people as possible. Again, if you're on YouTube, don't forget to hit the subscribe button. And if you're listening to us on Apple Podcasts, please do us a massive favor and give us a 5-star review. All of those things help us to go up in the rankings, which means we can help influence more people. So today's guest is Kate Gladden, who went from broken-hearted sister battling an eating disorder to, again, one of Australia's 100 women of influence. Kate is living proof that what doesn't kill us makes us stronger. She's an international speaker, certified life coach, resilience specialist, and published author of multiple books. Through her live talks, online coaching program, and podcast show, Okay, Now What, Kate has shared her empowering message with more than 200,000 students. Her mission is to teach young people the social and emotional skills they need to improve their mental health and become more resilient. Welcome to the podcast, Kate Gladden.
Hello. Thank you so much for having me. I'm stoked to be on your show. Am I the first Aussie, or you've had a few along the way?
You're the first Aussie. Now, I've had an Englishman living in Australia, and that was bizarre. That was before I had Mikey the videographer. So he was actually sat around a campfire, and it was a bit weird because he was on Zoom, and he had this beard, and all I could see was this orange ember. And it got halfway through the episode. I was like, are you sat by a fire? And he was like, yeah. And I was like, that is such an Australian thing to do. But obviously, yes, he moved over there, so I thought it was really cool. But you're my first actual born and bred
Aussie.
So
yeah, but I'm still mixing it up because I'm in the US. So it's
we've said that before. So whereabouts in the US are you right now?
So I'm like Princeton, New Jersey. So that's like where that university is, the Princeton University. I'm like 5 minutes from that. So yeah, just here with my wonderful fiance after a crazy journey. I'm one of those wild, crazy people that follows their heart across the world and long distance love. So
can't knock it.
Yeah. But I learned the hard way quite young. Life's too short to, overthink things and save it for later. You just got to follow your heart. So here I am.
Absolutely. Now let's go on that note about being young, learning stuff. Like that's a perfect segue. It's almost like you knew, so you knew where you wanted to go with it. So take me back, because I said your story is awesome. Like I said to you before, there's so many different angles we can go down on this. So I would just like to start with younger you. Can you sort of take me back to younger you and kind of what your life looked like and some of the struggles that you'd gone through in your early years?
Ooh, younger me. I was definitely like growing up, I had everything I could have asked for in terms of a loving family, a lot of opportunities, went to a great school. So life was pretty good. But I did struggle a lot within my own like self-esteem and I guess self-acceptance. My nickname growing up was Tubby, so that kind of says it all. But I think for me, how I began to gain my sense of acceptance was through my grades and always achieving. So I came quite a perfectionist, high achieving kind of student that put a lot of pressure on herself. And I think I hated feeling out of control. I was a bit of a control freak, so I struggled a lot. As I began to finish school and realizing you got to make some big decisions and what's going to happen and everything. So I ended up ultimately with like an eating disorder and really struggling emotionally with that, but trying to keep it together on the surface and not tell anyone about my struggle. And again, that's now a big reason why I do what I do, is because I don't want other young people doing the same thing. But I think, again, life was good. I had what I needed. So I felt ashamed even in the struggle, because it's like, why am I struggling so much if I have, these good things in life? But I just didn't feel like I was enough. And I ended up going to university and doing a business degree and kind of thought, I'm just going to follow the yellow brick road of what society says is success. So getting the good corporate job, climbing the ladder, working really hard, getting the house, the car, the dog, the all that kind of stuff. I just thought I was like, I'm going to stick to what I know I'm good at in life. And that is kind of achieving and doing as I'm told. And it was right around as I was finishing university that I woke up one morning to my absolute worst nightmare, because I was privileged enough to grow up. I had an older brother and sister. So the eldest is Matt, then my middle sister, Nicole. We were super close growing up. She was 4 years older than me, but we often got mistaken for twins and shared everything, even our bedrooms growing up and everything. We used to just share clothes. And so, again, I kind of took her for granted. I thought she'd always be there. She's my sister. So she unfortunately sometimes got the back end of my meltdowns over exams and study stress and everything like that. But she was a rock star, absolutely amazing dancer, super talented. Do you know what, you would know what rugby league is being a British guy?
Yes.
So her greatest, like, she absolutely loved rugby league and she worked really hard on a journalism degree after she'd done some dancing overseas and decided to change kind of career paths. And so she got a job on the Channel 9 footy show, as we call it, so the rugby league show back in Australia, and had an amazing year there after working so hard. So she decided to take a break to go to Thailand with her boyfriend back in 2012. And I remember going to bed the night before seeing on Facebook her photos of her over in Thailand relaxing on the beach. And I was just like the jealous little sister, like, I want to be in Thailand. Not fair. So I went to bed. And then I would never forget, you know, hearing that, like, like that noise of, like, it was in the middle of the night and it was a Friday night and I was 20 years old. So I'm in my head, I'm thinking it's a friend out drunk or something, you know, calling in the middle of the night. But then when I flipped my phone over and it said, Mom, and it's like 3:30, I'm like, this isn't good. So I, you know, I answered and that's when my mom was quite panicked and let me know that Nicole had been in a motorbike accident as she was coming home for dinner over in Koh Samui. Jamie, her partner, was on the front. She was on the back of the bike, but a driver tried to cut them off on the wrong side of the road and just slammed into them. And she wasn't wearing a helmet, so she like took full impact and had really serious injuries and was being rushed into surgery. And just like that, you know, I felt like, you know, you can't really breathe. You just like, wait, what is going on? So I went down to the beach and I watched the sunrise that morning trying to, like, you know, just pray for Nicole. And the sunrise was so beautiful. I took a photo of it because I thought it was my sign that my sister was going to be okay. You know, when you see those things, you're like, this is it. This is like, everything's going to work out fine. And just trying to stay positive. But it was right as I was walking back to my car to be at my parents' house. I'd kind of avoided seeing them because I didn't want it to be real. But right as it went to close the door, Mum rang again and I tried to tell myself she probably just wants me to get milk or something on the way home. But that's just when my mum screamed, she's dead. And, you know, I dropped the phone, dropped out of the car. And that is that moment when literally it felt like life shattered around me. And my life's been rebuilding since that moment ever since.
How did you... Yeah, there's a lot to unpick there because obviously you've gone from your eating disorder and then your sister's death. So I want to go in like the weird order. I want to start with your sister and then sort of work backwards if that's all right. How did you find closure in that? Because again, doing my research into you, I know that the person that questioned your sister, he never got sentenced for that.
How you have done your research.
I have done my research. How did you find closure in that? Because there's the whole thing about no justice, and obviously you've lost someone at such an amazing age in the peak. Like, how have you managed to overcome that? Because I think there's a massive life lesson there. And again, having listened to your podcast and stuff and the life that you've built now, I'm just very curious at how you've actually managed to find that closure.
Yeah, it's certainly a process, but I think it's, I love the quote. I think how I can best sum up my, attitude or the perspective I took that helped with that is, you know, resilience isn't about fighting the old, it's about building the new. And so my family really looked at, like, where can we have the greatest impact in after Nicole's death? Is it trying to go back to Thailand and deal with an unjust system? And at the end of the day, it doesn't really change a thing. Nicole still wouldn't be alive. I'm not even sure that guy would still really even be in prison, but it wouldn't bring back her life. But what would carry her life forward is trying to do good and do other, you know, make a difference for others through her legacy. So I think for me, like it's in the past, like I can't change it. And it just would make us bitter, I feel like, if we were trying to fight against a system that we didn't really have much control over. And so I was more about, rather than trying to argue with the past, it's like, really, what can we create from this? And I've found, and like a big part of my message to students these days is, you know, we're taught a lot about find the positives in your situation, which is great when you're able to. But sometimes, you know, when I was lying there trying to choose a dress for my sister to be buried in and the jewelry she was going to wear to her own funeral, like there's no good in that moment. But through that, by focusing on like the pain and the problems, like, yes, this is unjust. By moving towards that, we have the opportunity ourselves to create the good. Like sometimes I feel like, you know, rather than trying to find the good in the circumstance, the good's in us to step up and be the good thing that happens to it by leaning into these problems and looking for ways that you can help solve for them or even save one other person from going through what you've gone through. And that's where we felt like we had the greatest impact, by raising awareness of travel safety so other people don't end up in that position. And it's not to slam on any of those countries or anything. It's just their way of life. They have different values and rules. And, you know, when they tend to see a tourist that's struggling, they tend to see dollar signs. Like, we got asked to pay our way out of this and everything. And even at one point, they're like, say Nicole was driving and all this stuff. So it's like, this isn't right. But I felt like I'd have way more ability to make a difference through trying to change people's attitudes and choices overseas than trying to change a government system. So yeah, and through that I found some closure.
I love that, because it's like a lot of people, not even necessarily if they're dealing with something as extreme as this, which again I hope that people don't have to go through, in life I think people try and hold on to things they can't control and they get consumed by it. So something bad happens to them, like they've lost their job or something's happened that's really unjust. Yeah. And they hold on to it so much and they form that identity on that. And then you just, every single day, you're living that negativity over and over again.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. And I really feel like for me, like when we lose someone we love, I like to say we can either let the best parts of us die with them or take the best parts of them to live on through us. And I feel like through Nicole's foundation, so, you know, we established that charity and I naturally became really interested in travel safety. And then we also give grants to performers and sports people. But that is like carrying her forward with us. I feel like if we made the other choice, it would have let the best parts of our family die away, trying to fight and argue against what we couldn't ultimately control. And so I felt like there was such a, you know, and the travel safety, like, an Australian tourist right before the pandemic. I mean, it's all very different now. Australians haven't moved anywhere in a while. you know, there was an Australian dying in Southeast Asia every, 17 hours, and a major cause from accidents like Nicole, where it's an interesting one too, because I'm all about taking personal ownership and responsibility, right? So yes, that other driver hit her from breaking the law and driving on the wrong side of the road. But Nicole's also the one who made the choice to get on the bike without a helmet. And so it's like, where do I have impact? Like, what do I wish Nicole was aware of before she went on that holiday, so she would have made a different choice? Firstly, to put a helmet on, and ultimately, in my opinion, in those roads, like Thailand have the second deadliest roads in the entire world. So, you know, Australia is like 100 and something. So like, she wouldn't do it back in Australia, yet we get to those places. And I'm sure it might be similar for, you know, a lot of UK tourists and stuff. When you go to these places that are so exotic and relaxing and you can kind of do things that you can't really do overseas, we suddenly think, oh, it must be safe then. But just because you can do it, it doesn't make it any more safe, especially concrete's concrete. No matter where you travel in the world, your head hits it, you're going to come off second best. So I was just kind of trying to like see like, what do I wish she knew and how can I save a life? Because from that, you know, I realized like the driver has the power to take Nicole's life, but he has no power over the impact it has on my life, right? And how I choose to weave this experience into my life and carry Nicole forward. And it was so healing and therapeutic to be able to do that. And I just can't see, like, I'm sorry for anyone listening who's, you know, you've gone through the most unjust things. I'm not saying you have to like what's happened. Like, of course, I don't like that my sister was killed, but can we stop arguing against the could haves and the should haves and the would haves, but take those lessons and carry them forward? So either you help someone else make a different choice, or you yourself, find greater purpose and meaning in that, I think is a big part of, especially when you go through like the trauma and the true adversity in life. I found that really powerful.
I think it's a big thing. I listened to someone on the podcast the other day. It was an American podcast, and it was talking about some sort of veterans and stuff like that. And it referenced Saving Private Ryan. I don't know if you've seen that movie, but at the end, when he's looking over the graves, and basically it's the people that died to save his life to get him back home. And he turns to his wife and say, have I lived a good life? Basically meaning, did these guys die like for me to live a good life? So it's like right now, like Nicole's died, but actually don't let her die in vain. Like, you've actually made it mean something, if that makes sense. So it's like, you can't undo that. It's happened. But actually it's like, well, it's happened. There's nothing I could do about that, but I don't want it to be just another death. That's just another number. Actually, I want to make an impact so that actually no other sister feels how I do. I think honestly, it's so powerful. It's giving me goosebumps actually. It's really powerful. It's really, really powerful.
Yeah, no, so, and it's so cool. Like, sorry, just to say, like 10 years on, Nelly, I still share Nicole's story nearly every day with people. And that's what I wanted for her to keep living with me and to stay alive in this world in any way I could.
So. I can still see when you talk about it, it doesn't get any easier. I can see from talking to you, I can see from the screen, like seeing you talking about it. And I imagine it is something that never does get easier, but it's having to go through that because there's a mission behind it, if that makes sense. It's
purposeful.
The way that I say when I talk about my depression, I'm a visitor there now. I don't live there. So I'm going back there to help people, but I then don't live there. So right now you're just a visitor, you're visiting that pain, but then you're not living there, if that makes sense.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's a good analogy.
I'm just going to take it back a bit more with your childhood and work it back in the eating disorder, if I may. I don't know the answer to this question. How much of an impact did your sister have on your recovery from an eating disorder? Was she aware of it? Had she helped you at all? And how did you actually overcome that?
Yeah, it's an interesting question because Nicola kind of moved out of home a bit. She moved out of home when, she at 16 years old, she moved to the New Zealand Ballet for a little bit and then came back. And then she was in danced over in Tokyo Disney in Japan and things like that. So it was like year 10, I kind of was just like a healthy size and everything. And then within like a year, I think I lost 15 plus kilos and kind of slimmed right down. But I just brushed it off. I honestly didn't really speak to anyone about it. I get people be like, you know, eat a burger or this or that. But I know, and it's an unfortunate reality, to be perfectly honest, like she was a young female herself as well, struggling with her own body issues as a dancer. You know, she was always told, like, she was always skinny, but, you know, the ballet teacher would sometimes be like, oh, getting a bit of meat on those legs and stuff.
Honestly, so that's such a dangerous industry. Like, what one of my coaches is an ex-dancer. That the dance industry has got a lot to answer for, I think, about what it's actually does to females' mental health.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, yeah. And I was dancing, like, all my life too, but I kind of danced under Nicole's shadow because she was just such a natural dancer. I did it because I idolized Nicole. And it's funny, I never felt, I compared myself to her, but I was never resentful or like jealous. I just thought she was just, you know, everything I wanted to be. But I think for me, I did get to a point where, you know, it was really starting to be obvious how skinny I was, and I started brushing it off. And it's interesting, like I got to a point, you know, I was controlling, like I wouldn't eat during the day and, you know, kind of just obsessed over it and would weigh myself. Like I'd sit down and try and study and then I'd feel really anxious. So I'd just get up and weigh myself because it sounds strange, but standing on the scales and seeing kind of the number edge down and be like, I did that. It felt like I had some control. That was all control mechanism thing. But I think what really shattered it for me was losing my sister. Firstly, there was two things in that, realizing all these numbers I was assessed of, my grades, my weight, you know, how much money I was going to earn, all that. None of that was ever mentioned in a funeral speech. Like no one's talking about that stuff. And so writing my own sister's funeral speech and seeing how many regrets I would have had because of my fears and my priorities being so out of whack, was a big wake up call. But also realizing, and I don't know how to say this in a way that sounds like back to front, but I think there's like a Buddha quote by it, but it's like, don't worry, like nothing's under your control. Like in this sense of like I thought if I just choose this particular path, then maybe I can stay safe in life and never have to struggle. Mm-hmm. But in this way of like, I was so obsessed with controlling the world that I didn't learn that skill that I love to teach now of controlling my response. Like that is the only thing that is ever within our control, how, you know, that skill of response ability. So it was kind of just almost shattered me of like, hey, you in a way, like you don't actually really have any control over the world, but that's not what you need to make a meaningful life. It's to control the muscle between your ears a little more. So yeah, it was interesting. It kind of shattered that illusion of control in this like freeing way of like redirecting my focus back to what really matters. But yeah, it's a tough thing. And I still coach students and girls through it daily, even if they don't have the eating disorder per se. It's that, and even men, you know, like that struggle with acceptance of our body, which is so sad because of all the things we can, you know, fight for and work and put our energy towards in this world. It's so sad that so many of us feel it has to be, you know, struggling and hating on our body. It's really tragic.
I think this is what I liked about you so much when I was doing research into you, is that we're on the same mission, just with different mm-hmm. almost outcomes that make sense. Like yours is obviously on the body positivity, accepting self, that resilient stuff. I'm very much on the similar thing, but I'm coming at it from like a depression point of view, if that makes sense. Mm-hmm. So it's the same mission essentially, which is to help people take control of this, which is the most powerful tool it is. And again, mm-hmm. I'm not sure why specifically you targeted kids, but for me, it was because adults would come to me and we'd unpick their struggles. And it would all come from childhood. And it's mm-hmm. just like, and then I look back at me and I was like, oh, well, shit. Like, actually, that's when I struggled. And that's when I needed someone. I needed someone at that age. So that's why I'm so passionate now about going to schools, to be like, I want to be the person that I wish I had when I was that age. Is that the sort of similar sort of Absolutely. Responsibility you feel like you have?
Yeah. Yeah. Being who I needed when I was younger, 100%. And I think just realizing, like, I thought I had forever. Like, I remember saying to my sister, like, we're just trying to discuss about when to have kids, younger, older, and that. And I was like, oh, I'm just going to like, you know, get the career going, have my kids, blah, 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 and do all this stuff. And then I'll figure out like what I really love in life and kind of relax and do my thing. Like when I'm older, like 50s or whatever, and this and that. And then Nicole was like, yeah, but what if you don't live that long? And I was like, what the heck do you mean, Nicole? Like, don't be morbid, you know, like, don't say that. Like, don't, like, so many of us want to hide our own mortality, like, hide from our own mortality. While me keeping my own mortality front and center in my mind every day is actually what helps me connect with my most kind, brave self. In saying that, I think I also love helping teens because I think so many of them think, oh, they'll figure it out because like they've got life to kind of go through it. But I know I want these kids to start enjoying and living their life now because no tomorrow's guaranteed. Like why let them get till they're 25 or so or whatever and then they figure it out? It's like, no, I think if you have the ability to, you know, connect with teens, which really is all about just being real with them. Like they smell BS. Like if you're trying to put on a front, they'll see straight through it. But they're also good. Like I love that generation. They get a bad rap, but they're my favorite people to work with for sure.
Honestly, there's one of the activities that I do and I basically get something on the board and I basically like put words out there and it's like, success is, and they've got to fill in the blank, happiness is. And one of the kids mm-hmm. said, success is relative. And I was just like, fuck it. I was like, yes. I say to them, there's no right or wrong answer.
Yeah.
But when he said that, I was like,
I think
that may be the actual right answer. I was like, but again, and it's all like happiness, isn't it? Coming up with these amazing answers. And mm-hmm. I specifically like to work with the troubled kids. So the ones with attendance right. issues, the ones that aren't showing up. And the last school I was in, they were like trashing it. They were literally trashing the school. But you get them down and you basically unpick it all. And you understand mm-hmm. like fundamentally, they're just very lost. Because they're in a society now where they're pressured to do certain things. Like obviously when we were at school, I'm assuming we're very similar sort of ages. There wasn't that pressure on us. But nowadays I see all these things on social media. There's all this stuff. And it's like at that age, they still should be kids.
Yeah.
But 100%. Actually, but now I feel like they've got, especially for girls, some of their like potential eating disorders, although they may not have eating disorders or issues with their body. I mean, the statistics show that they probably will do at some point in their early 20s because constantly they're bombarded with celebrities, magazines, Instagram. It's like that whole self-worth, which again, I want to loop it back to because one of the things you struggled with was again, that self-worth and stuff like that. How have you worked on that? And what do you do with kids to actually help them find that? Because that is ultimately it. If you can love yourself, it changes everything. Because if you don't like yourself, everything around you, and if you've got these belief systems, which we'll go into and stuff like that, but fundamentally, liking yourself, how do you teach that with kids? Because that's a hard topic to
yes. To well, it's still a daily practice. Trust me, I'm working on it. But yeah, so I think a big part of work that I realize can kind of help kids just be kinder to themselves and accept themselves more is doing some work around value. So looking at what do you stand for in life? What matters to you? Like too many of them, the reason it's such a roller coaster is their self-worth is attached to things outside of their control that's conditional on usually performance or appearance or other people's opinions. And I can totally relate to that. And it's just, you know, so when they're getting the praise and they're getting noticed and they're getting in the teams, it's all great. But the second they're not, they feel, you know, shattered. So for me, I'm like, hey, what if we practice now each day? Like I kind of check in with my kids and like, okay, how did you live true to your values today? And like high-fiving yourself for that. So things that they usually pick like courage or kindness or whatever, they start learning to validate and notice those times where they're living true to, you know, the kind of person they want to be. So valuing themselves for their actions, not just the outcome or how they're received by other people, but from back within here, that usually helps them realize that they are, you know, pretty awesome humans, and also encourage them to not avoid those situations where they're uncomfortable. Like they want to do some, maybe, I don't know, sign up for the school play or something. Like I had one girl with the choir and she was like, I'm so nervous. I'm like, yeah, but this is your chance to live true to courage right now and to sign up to do it. And then afterwards, you know, she's so precious, like, I did it. Like they're able to tell me like, I was brave. I was like, so, and then she ended up getting in, but that was kind of the cherry on top of like the fact that she follows through. And so I like to teach them about valued living, and it's a little bit of like ACT stuff combined with like CBT. So
I can't remember what it was. I listened to you. It might've been your very, very first podcast.
Oh,
and you said something. Trust me, I do this. When people say this is my first episode, I'm like, oh my God, please don't.
Why did you start?
But I was just like, oh, I'll find out more about a story there. And you said something, I cannot remember for the life of what it was, but it was very, I thought, this is, you said it was a phrase or a wording. I thought, this reminds me very much of ACT. So yeah. Again, I've done a course in that. So it's okay, when you said that and it's about valued living, I thought, I hadn't wrote it on my notes. It must have slipped my mind. As soon as you said that.
No, but that I love a combination of like all those kind of things, plus like intertwined with stories and examples. But that like, because it comes a point, like I love CBT and showing like, you know, how your thoughts influence feelings and actions, and how if we shift our mindset and our perspective, then, you know, we can change what kind of comes next. And but it also comes a point where you have a human brain that naturally fears uncertainty. It can be negative. It can, you know, do these things. So we're going to ultimately have some anxiety sometimes, or, you know, fear or worry or whatever. So that isn't a reason to stop doing the thing though. Like, I think they wait for the happiness or the confidence to come. And I'm like, no, we earn our way to confidence through courage.
Oh, I like that one. Earn yes. your way.
Yes. I have a podcast actually called Earning Confidence. You can check that one out.
Well, what I was going to say was, like I mentioned in the intro, I want people to check out your podcast because it is absolutely awesome. And that's what I said, like the more research I've done into it. And again, my client's in the room as well. Like she listened to it as well. And it's really well articulated. Like it's a very, very good episode. So again, my listeners here, I strongly recommend you check that out because, again, we're on the same mission. So like I said, it's the same thing.
Yes.
Really different. And it's what I say to people all the time. It's like, I like to get people on, not just they've got the same values as me. Like I genuinely had no idea to have done my research that we were so similar. But it's just a case of the way that I liken mental health and mindset. My analogy is once you understand the core principles, it's like a coat hanger. Like it just is what it is. Like all mental health is the same stuff. Like ACT theory, CBT, whatever it is. Once you know the principles of how this works, all people do is put their own clothes on it. And that's what they're trying to say. So right now we've got the same principle, but how you articulate it, because your life experiences, what you've gone through is different to how I articulate it. It's the same message essentially, but actually how you say it may resonate with my audience more than I do. So that's what I'm trying to do. I'm trying to just that one thing that you might say and people be like, oh,
yeah,
that's it. Mm-hmm. And that one thing starts to cascade. And that's fundamentally why I set this podcast up. Help one person. Like obviously now I'm hoping it helps more than one person, but to me, you start out just like, I just want to help one person, just give them that one thing, because you get excited. You're like, I've got this information. I need to get it out there. And then bam, off a podcast goes.
Yes.
So when it comes to values, how do you go about that? So like, let's say my audience right now is listening and they're like, right, I want to figure out my values. Mm-hmm. What does that really look like? How can people know what are values?
Yeah, I mean, I'm sure there's probably a way better definition than I'm about to throw at you. But it, you know, for me, it's like, what do you stand for in life? What matters to you? Like, it's about who you're being on the way to the goal. So a lot of our society, when kids are finishing school, it's like, what's your goal? What college you want to get into? What job are you thinking of? What field? But they're not getting them to think internally first about what matters to them, right? So some kids value creativity. Or, you know, some people value freedom, while on the other end, there's kids that value stability, right? Like they like structure and all that. Like for me, like take away my freedom or like freedom of expression, especially, and I'd go crazy. So, you know, it's kind of like, but then they're blindly chasing towards this thing that like they think that they should want, but it's not in alignment of what really matters to them. So I usually get them to fill out worksheets around, you know, people who you admire. Why do you admire them? What qualities in them is that you really admire? When's the last time you took a stand for something? Like what was that really mattered to you? So a few questions around that. And then it's honestly as simple as like Googling, like I have, you know, just a list of all these words. It's not really rocket science, really. I was trying to come up with this fancy, like elaborate, amazing plan, but it's just looking at it and you will see words that kind of like, it's almost like you just connect with them. Like you just feel them. Like for me, I feel some words in my like soul, like courage, growth, contribution, like for me. And like I've now made my life purpose around those things, because for me, I get the concept, and I don't know if this is going to be controversial for you. I'm curious to hear your take on it. Let's see. Okay. So
love controversy. I'm like, love it.
You're into the same stuff as me. So let's have a chat about it and see. And I don't think it's as controversial as I think, but I get, so, you know, a lot of people say, I just want, my purpose in life is to be happy. It sounds beautiful. And I get it, I think, in one context. But when kids hear that life's about being happy, but I don't know, they're struggling with a particular thing, or they've got to like speak up the courage, or they've gone through the loss of their mum or anything, and they're thinking, well, I'm not feeling happy right now. I don't know. Happiness to me is just about feeling good. But also, like, life is filled with adversity. To get a goal, you're going to have to struggle and overcome things. You're going to have to be uncomfortable, like, a lot of the time. So for me, like, I feel like it makes more sense to kind of open up to this, like, purpose. Like, life is about growth and, like, giving the best of you, which on the other side of that comes, for me, a greater sense of, rather than just, like, happy, like, temporarily feels good, it's, like, meaning and fulfillment, which I'd never felt in my life before losing my sister and actually stepping up to a purpose greater than myself, which for some people it's not, you know, travel safety campaign, but it's that goal that like stretches and grows you, and you don't always feel comfortable or happy along the way in that sense. So for me, like, I don't kind of really promote like the whole let's just be happy. I think great, like being grateful and having a sense of inner peace and acceptance of the world. But you don't really necessarily want to feel happy about a lot of things that are going on in the world either. So, yeah.
Oh, no, let's be completely honest with this. Why would you want to be happy about your sister dying?
Yeah, exactly.
It's understanding that. And I completely agree with everything you just said there, by the way, 150,000,000%. but it's understanding, it's accepting that sometimes life is going to suck. But it's like, you've got to embrace the suck. And this is what I basically, this is what I teach kids. It's all about, again, resilience, which again, ties nicely into where I want to go with this. Because nowadays, I think we've got a lot of wet lettuces in the world that are snowflakes, essentially. And basically, I use an analogy saying, be a weed, not an orchid, because orchids are beautiful, amazing plants, but they're pathetic. Like, too much light, not enough, they die. Too much water, they're pathetic. But weeds, they thrive and survive. And that's how it should be. And for me, I love failure because it's a chance for me to grow and learn. And Mikey, my videographer, like, anytime I mess up in any way, shape, or form, I instantly am like, right, what can I take from this? What can I learn so I can actually grow? And I actually love it because it means I'm pushing myself every single day. Whereas with kids, another quote I like to use is a ship at a dock is safe. That's not what ships are designed for. Yet so many kids are trying to play it safe. It's like, you're not designed to play it safe. Like, you're designed to actually go and do something and find out what you want to do. And the biggest thing when it comes to happiness as well, I say this to kids, one of the last things I say is happiness is, and they can't define it. And I'll be like, adults can't define it either. So I'm just like, isn't it funny that everyone agrees that they want happiness? Yet when you ask people, what is happiness? They can't actually define it, meaning they're spending their entire life walking around not knowing the thing they're searching for. It's bizarre.
Yeah.
No one knows what happiness is. If you say to them, what is happiness? They can't tell you. Like, but you're telling me that life's about happiness, but you can't define what happiness is? That to me makes no sense. That's like driving around to a destination, not actually knowing where the destination
Putting
is.
Putting in the, yeah.
Makes no sense to me.
Or anything.
Yeah. So for me, it's all about embracing that journey. And actually, again, gratitude is a big thing that I talk about as well. Like, if you can just be grateful for the little things, it all adds up. Honestly, so talk to me then about resilience. So this is a big thing. So what does being resilient mean to you? Because I think this is something that, as a society, not only just talk about kids here, as a society, I don't think we're very resilient. I think we have the potential to be resilient. I think some people are in certain situations, but I think on the whole, we've lost that ability to be resilient.
I mean, the simplest way I sum it up is becoming better rather than bitter from your challenges. So that's like
I love that.
Yeah. Yeah. We're all like throwing quotes at each other. We'll have a greater repertoire after this. It's just like knowing, like there is the technical, like I try and avoid the whole bounce back thing. Cause for me, it certainly wasn't a bounce. It's about building skills, not just like bouncing your way through life. Like, oh, I had a setback and then I'm just like up the next day. Totally fine. Like it definitely wasn't like that for me losing my sister. But for me, it's just learning how to build, you know, there's the initial like coping skills, like things just to get you through the moment. Cause a lot of like, and this doesn't resonate, I guess, with teens or younger kids who haven't gone through, you know, some of the harder things in life, but introducing those teens who have, whether it's abuse or loss of family members or anything, is also post-traumatic growth. So I love that concept of, you know, there's post-traumatic stress, which everyone hears about and they think I'm struggling and oh no, I'm in this like stress mode, which we all have to go through, but they've found there's this new phenomenon of post-traumatic growth. But the important thing to realize is that it's not in spite of post-traumatic stress, it's an extension of it. Like there's no getting around the stress and the struggle after you've gone through some sort of trauma or adversity. So for me, like I've loved learning more about that. And even just hearing that there's this phase that of growth, like sometimes people don't even realize that there is this light at the end of the tunnel. So when they hear like this other phase, like they hear about the post-traumatic stress, that there's a growth phase that can come after this. Like again, just planting that seed of hope that this struggle isn't just completely in vain is a big one.
I think that's a big thing for people. They want a bit of hope. Like a lot of people don't actually know in anything that there's an alternative. It's like, yes, what you're going through right now sucks, but give it time. It does get better. This is kind of what that phase looks like. And as you said, it's just giving that awareness. Because if you're not aware of it, as you said, especially when you know it's like we go into schools, you've got no idea what those kids are going through. And a lot of those kids are suffering in silence. And that's the hardest thing. So when I'm talking to the kids, I'll start off, I basically say, there's people in this room right now that are struggling and you've got absolutely no idea that they're struggling. So just show some respect and sort of talk through it. And all it is, as you said there, just planting those seeds to let those kids know that if you are struggling, I promise you it gets better. Here's how it's kind of going to look like. So I feel like, again, correct me if I'm wrong, but from grief's not something that I know I will go through it at some point in my life, but I've not gone through it myself personally. We've had some amazing guests on that. And the general consensus is that if you try and suppress it and ignore it, it just gets worse and build up. So is that something that you try and teach these kids, that if it's there, that just that actual acceptance of it rather than trying to resist it?
Oh yeah. What you resist persists. Is that the saying or something
like
that?
Yeah.
But it's really true. And I look back now, because there's things that I did do, I think, automatically after losing Nicole, that was me being resilient, that, you know, I wasn't sitting back and being like, how can I be resilient today? But I was just doing everything I could to keep living and I really believe, you know, I actually studied a lot of, I read a lot of Viktor Frankl quotes. So from like the Holocaust, and just because I felt like no one had it as bad as me, which as 20 years old, a lot of kids around me didn't. And I felt very isolated in going through this. So I had to cling on to whatever I could. And so a lot of it was Viktor Frankl's quotes, you know, and I feel like when, you know, actually, I don't even think this is Viktor Frankl, but I think it's been given credit to him, but that whole like when you know your why, you can kind of bear any how kind of thing. So for me, having a deep purpose, I just loved my sister so much that I was just like, and it, I remember my dad carrying me out of the church after, you know, her funeral, and I was screaming, but I remember that moment. I don't remember much about the day. It was a blur, but I was just like, this pain like is not in vain. Like I am going to live the heck out of my life. And my love, the only thing deeper and greater than this pain is my love for my sister. Like this pain will never outrun that. And so that gave me such a reason to try. Like for me, journaling after losing Nicole was huge. And I wouldn't even say it was journaling. I would just sit with a notebook and just write as much as I needed to get off my chest. Because yes, I went and saw a counselor and that, but sometimes I didn't want anyone to just speak back at me. I just wanted, and it felt like, you know, I would write them as if I was talking to Nicole. So that kind of gave me some closure because my sister went off on a holiday and I never saw her again. And I didn't get to say goodbye to her. They wouldn't let us, you know, kind of see the body in that. So in my mind, it was such a like, wait, what? She's on a holiday and now she's gone. So I think being able to write a lot helped me. But I look back at my journal entries and I can see I did like a little sandwich. I didn't know I was doing it. But I'd start with like kind of how grateful I was to be her sister. And then I'd like pour all my pain out. And then I'd try and tell her like one little thing good that happened that day or something. So I can see that focus of gratitude. Again, it wasn't like it canceled out my grief, but it gave me the strength I needed to keep processing through it rather than shutting down.
And you did that automatically?
Yeah. I kind of did that. I don't know why. I did spend a lot of time on Pinterest, I must admit, pinning a lot of quotes. So just little things like that, I think. But I looked at my sister and I was asking myself like, how would Nicole handle this and that? And she was a very grateful person and thing. So I tried to practice that. Like she'd wake up in the morning and be like, look at the sunrise. And I'd be like, oh, I'm just tired. So now I try and be a little bit more, you know, noticing those small things. And my favorite quote that I saw that I still live by when it's a rough day is not every day is a good day, but there's something good in every day. So I call it like a jot, just one thing, like take your mind for a jot and just find that one thing. So you don't completely shut down on the world and this is the worst thing and everything like that. It's, so that was definitely, helpful. And then the quote from Victor that really, made me step up was, everything can be taken from man, but one thing, the last of human freedoms, the freedom to choose one's attitude in any given set of circumstances.
Oh, I love that.
Yeah. And when I heard that one and I looked up his story and just began to read more and more, I was like, we really don't know why things happen in life, but I really feel like we owe it to each other to choose to find purpose in it. And you get to choose your purpose and meaning in whatever you're going through. And I just say, choose whatever brings you strength and peace and inspiration to keep getting back up and trying again the next day.
I love thinking, I don't know where, if this is your thing or you've taken it from somebody else, but your thing about response ability. Like, I think that's such a big thing, like your ability to choose your response to that situation. I think that's such a powerful thing. Can I just ask, before we go into the thing about responsibility, can I just ask, is journaling still something that you do? Is it like a daily practice or is it something that you just pull out if you're having a really traumatic time? Is it that like your go-to? Like what is journaling to you now?
Yeah, I would say journaling is more something that I can, if I'm feeling I'm starting to bottle up, like, you know, when sometimes you start to feel like in your chest and a bit like I'm carrying something around in here, that's when I typically pull out and write. And then I'm sure it's like you, sometimes I'll just be thinking something that's like rattling around my brain, whether it's like wanting to write a post or a podcast idea. So that's when I just sit down and I kind of write. And that's why so many, I'm sure you get this too, when people are like, oh my gosh, I so needed that podcast episode. And I'm like, yeah, because so did I. So
it's more Instagram, like Instagram post. Like I'll write an Instagram post. Yeah, like, I needed to hear this. I'm like, yeah. And it's like, it's because I've wrote it from a place of people need to hear this. And this is all down to Mikey. Obviously Mikey's a poet by trade. So he basically taught me about creative writing. So there was one time I went away on holiday and I kind of said to him, like, I wasn't going to be in a good place. And he was like, try writing like poetry. So I basically started that. And it's so therapeutic that when you are struggling, like you're saying there, you don't really know what's going on, just to write it down. And yeah. I found such power in that because it's just raw. And that rawness is what people need because it's relatable. Like, people don't want to hear me in this good place be like, oh yeah, so when I was depressed, this kind of stuff happened.
Yeah.
I think a lot of people want to be like, oh fuck, like that's deep. That's kind of how I feel, but I didn't really know how to articulate it like that. And I find that they're normally the best ones. And like I said to Mikey, when I do my episodes like that, I think you're the same. You only do episodes like that once you know that you can add value, meaning that you don't just go for an experience once. And you're like, oh, I'm going to talk about this now. It's like, once you're like, oh, this is something that I actually do. Journaling is something I do when I struggle. I think people need to know about this. And then you want to get out there because it's coming from a place of, this really helped me. This genuinely helped me. And then you can actually talk about it, if that makes sense. I feel a lot of people in this space, again, I'm not thinking of anyone in particular, but they'll just like, maybe like read a book and they'll try and regurgitate it. It's like, you've not really lived it, if that makes sense. And I think what you said there, especially when it comes to the journaling, I've got one that's literally right next to me here, where if I'm struggling at work, I'll literally start the sentence with, I am feeling, and then I just start writing.
I love that, actually.
I think I got that from Tim Ferriss.
Good old Timmy.
Yeah, Tim Ferriss. I don't know much of his stuff. I've got his book for our work. I've never read it, but I like a lot of his stuff when it pops up every now and again. I did a bit of research into him, and that was something I thought, that's actually quite good. I like that. So let's link it back around to this responsibility then. Like, talk to me a little bit about that, because that is quite a good thing, like controlling your response to a situation. Because that ultimately is the key. Like, we can't control what goes on externally, but we can control ourselves and how we respond to any situation. So that's quite a deep thing to try and get across to people. So how do you approach that subject?
Yes, especially tough for teenagers, right? Their frontal lobe is still developing, and the frontal lobes where we have that, you know, logical ability to rationalize and think beyond the moment and stuff. So, you know, when I'm teaching it to kids, I like to say, you know, we have our automatic negative thoughts. They're always going to come. You might have heard them by ants. I didn't create that term, so I can't claim that one, but ants. So just kind of understanding there's always going to be that initial instinct. Like, our brain is quite reactive by default. And thank goodness, because a lot of the time that's how our ancestors stayed alive, is they weren't like sitting back and contemplating all the time, is that a tiger? Or like, they're just like, they always assume the worst, like that's just to keep you safe. But a lot of the times this is misled. So for me, it's just recognizing. So I have three R's to it. I call it the three R's to responsibility. I love alliteration, so thankfully that worked. So the first R is to really hit that internal pause button and recognize, what am I thinking right now that's causing how I'm feeling? Because a lot of us are quite externally focused, like what's happening in my life that's causing me to feel this bad. But, and I'm not saying that we don't go make changes in our life and take care of ourselves and do those things. But first of all, we want to look internally and get more curious about what's happening in there, because that is the one thing that we do ultimately have control over in any situation. And so for me, like, there was no way I was going to be able to bring my sister back. I could have argued all day long about it, but I didn't have that time machine. So learning about the power of responsibility and our perspective was such a lifesaver for me to realize this pain and this darkness wouldn't always be this hard. And so it was just finding a way to tell my sister's story that brought me peace and inspiration. And I can tell that after this, but the first R is to really recognize that, okay, that the thought, because so often we are so reactive, we don't recognize our own thinking. We think they are the factual circumstances of our lives. That is such a bad grade. I totally messed this up. This is going to ruin everything. That person is a jerk. I am just a procrastinator. I am just a bad person. We think we're just stating the world as it is. We don't realize we're stating our own thoughts and beliefs about it. So for me with kids, I'm always kind of like, okay, let's take out the pure facts of the situation. And then everything left over is our thoughts and story about it, and kind of showing them. And this is like big adulting stuff, which is tough sometimes, but, you know, good old Shakespeare, I'm pretty sure, said this, which is surprising because I was never a fan of him in high school, but nothing is either good or bad, but only thinking makes it so. So just kind of neutralizing things a little bit. Now, this doesn't instantly make you feel amazing, but it does help you feel that little bit less out of control and that impulse to need to go and fix or change or argue or melt down about something happening. If we can kind of just slow it all down and take a look, okay, I'm overwhelmed right now because I have way too much stuff to do. No, wait, let's recognize I'm overwhelmed right now because I'm thinking the thought I have too much to do. So just kind of shifting and seeing that, that awareness is huge, right? Because we can't change what we're not aware of. So we need that first step of recognizing. And then the next R for me is to reflect upon the impact of these thoughts. So are these thoughts helpful? And for me, I define a helpful thought as, does it help you take productive action or show up in a way that you're proud of? And this is interesting. Like, there's two reasons I like to reflect. Number one, because sometimes thoughts that may create uncomfortable feelings are still helpful, right? And so, for example, like when I think I miss my sister, I wish she was here, and I grieve and I cry, like I don't need to change that. That's part of grieving. To me, that is quote unquote a productive action. Or I might listen to a song or like watch a video of her, but like I don't, just because I think this thought and I feel sadness, I actually want to feel that way. And that's fine. We don't have to kind of change that one. But typically ones like, you know, let's just say your parents have said you can't go back to college for a semester because you failed one of your subjects. And then you think this is ruining everything. So you feel really angry and bitter at them and embarrassed. So then your action, because what's going to drive our actions if we're not paying attention is always going to be how we feel. We might then mope around the house. If our parents try and talk to us, we snap at them. We withdraw from our friends because we're embarrassed. And then as a result, you can kind of see that's likely going to create more consequences, more tension, more quote unquote proof that everything's getting ruined by this. Mm-hmm. So that's where I kind of teach teens like the CBT stuff of like, okay, if we keep letting these thoughts and feelings drive us, because that's what's the fuel. Like if we're in a car, that's what's going to be driving us. Is it taking us to a destination we want to be and that we're kind of proud of and getting us closer to our goals? That is helpful for them to see, firstly, why our thoughts begin to feel more true to us, because subconsciously, if we're not recognizing them, we kind of create more proof and evidence for them and how we're showing up and the results that creates. But also kind of seeing, like for me, I could argue all day long as to why it's so unfair that that driver was never charged or my sister was killed. But so it's not, is it helpful for me to keep focusing on that? Like even if a thought is quote unquote true, it doesn't mean you have to stay stuck on just that record playing all the time and that being your leading story. So for me, it's like rather than trying to like, there is a little bit of like, is it true? Is it not? But then sometimes I'm like, okay, we could argue this all day long, but is it helpful for you? And that's a choice you get to make. I'm not here to tell you, but if not, that's when we have the choice to do the third and final R, which is to redirect. So redirect our focus to find more useful, empowering things to focus on. And this is something that is kind of, I guess, personal to the situation and what we're dealing with as to things I'd offer up. But there is one universal trick that I've found, and it's part of what we do as coaches all the time. The best way to break through negative mind chatter is to simply ask yourself empowering questions, right? Better questions. Because our brain's a question answering machine. It's what it's designed to do. It hates having an open loop. So if you ask your brain a question over and over enough, it will begin to go find an answer for it. So some of the ones I like to say, you know, what can I learn from this to help my life or the life of someone else? You know, you might be in a situation like me where it's too late to save someone or too late to save yourself from it, but is there something you can do to save someone else? A great one that I love to ask teens after they've had like a bad grade or game or something, they're feeling a bit down. It's like, all right, how can we turn this setback into a comeback? All right. Because rather than arguing, I should have done this and that, and I'm like, okay, but let's focus on giving some answers to this now. And it immediately gets them more future focused and kind of action oriented, which is where we want our brain to be. Or a great one I wish I had above high school and college, is like on my desk there as I was going through all that, is, you know, how will I think about this in 5 years' time? So again, another good question that helps us zoom out of the moment and often see those little things about what so-and-so said on us on Instagram or why my Snapchat hasn't been replied to yet.
I think that's in it with questions, like you said there. Like I talk about podcast episodes. I did an episode on this about the power of questions, because the thing is, we're always asking ourselves questions. The problem is most of the time it's very disempowering. So what you just said there, like it's just actually recognizing, is the questions I'm talking to myself, like, why am I so fat? Why am I so useless? Again, ask the brain the question. It will give you an answer. It will show you all the reasons why you're fat, quote unquote, why you're a failure, why you're useless, why you're no good. But actually, if you can then recognize it, reflect, and then redirect it, and then ask yourself positive, empowering questions, again, the brain, you are the master of your brain. It will do as it's told. You control it. So if you can take control of the conscious, it will take control of the subconscious. Right. I want to know the answer to this question. Bam, the brain will go and start to give you reasons why you can succeed, why you can do this. The problem is you said that. I've never heard of this. This is why I love having like guests on like yourself, because you just make things so much simpler. Like this is like, it's like the three R's. It's perfect. It's brilliant. It's like recognize, reflect, redirect. I'm like, yeah, like that's perfect. It's like so simple and concise. It's absolutely brilliant. And again, belief systems as well. That's a big thing. For me, like one of the big things I try to do with the kids as well is get them to recognize the beliefs are stuff that have no factual proof. And so many of these kids have such limiting beliefs that have been put on them by their parents. And then the parents have got the story from their parents. And it's just this whole thing about just actually what you've done there, the three R's, is just breaking that cycle to get them to ask, is this actually helping you become the person that you want to be? It's so, so powerful. I absolutely love it.
Oh, good. Yeah. That was me after reading lots of books and trying to distill it all down. I was like, and it rhymes. So I was very excited about that one.
you seem very much like me. Like I love analogies. I've got to understand it. So I love an analogy, but you seem to love things like that. Where it's like, it's just so simple and easy to articulate it. And it's absolutely brilliant.
Yeah.
You talk a lot about habits as well. What habits do you actually have? This is more of a personal question for me, like that I'm generally curious about. What kind of habits do you have that have helped you basically build this resilience we're talking about? Like, is there any habits that you've got that... So the way that I liken it is about putting on your body armor in the morning. Like I put my armor on and I crack on with the day. But like I said in my last podcast episode, the more I've gone down this path, I've become quite rigid, flexible and not so rigid with my routines, because I found that I was so... fixated on it. It's like, if I didn't do all five things in the morning, then my day's going to be crap. But now I'm a lot more flexible to be like, well, actually, what do I need today? And so, sorry, I know I kind of went for a massive tangent there, but what habits do you sort of have that help you stay mentally resilient?
Well, firstly, it's this big thing here, coffee.
Oh, there we go. And again, obviously, it's morning for you. It's 4 o'clock for me, and I've just had another one. It's like,
oh no, I'm all about it. For me, too much coffee is never enough. I love like getting up in the morning, coffee. I actually have a bit of a read, but sometimes I don't get that in. But the one thing that I don't compromise on is my exercise. So for me, that is my outlet of just learning how to tolerate discomfort, mental strength, training, meeting myself, letting out some of the stress of the day sometimes. Typically, I like to do it first thing in the morning, though, and just get on with my day, get the endorphin high. But, and I'm sure, the physical and mental benefits of exercise, you know, for me, it's such a, I had a, obviously a complicated relationship with exercise for a little bit when I was going through my body image stuff. But for me now, I do it as a gift to myself and also like training for my mental health. Like it's less, and I finally feel at a place now, and it's been years, where I'm not worried about like how many calories did I burn or like whatever. It's just like getting that like sweat on and knowing that I like to say, I always joke with my husband, I'm like, well, the hardest part of my day is now over. So everything else from here is relative, because me and the Stairmaster, we're not very good friends, but so that habit of exercise for me has been huge. I wouldn't function without it.
Do you have anything in the evening that you do as well? Or is it mainly just like the morning?
In the evening, what do I like to do in the evening? For me, the best habit I've gotten into is just making sure I shut my laptop down at a decent time and spend quality time with my fiance and that. Because I'm someone that could probably stay up way too long working on my business. Because when you own your own business, you know, there's always little emails and different time zones that can come through. So for me, it's really important to get quality time with my pup. I also love to take the dog for a walk, like something simple like that. I like to make sure I get outside and get fresh air, at least even in the middle of winter, like for at least 20 minutes or something. Vitamin D, like I really appreciate that. Time by the water. We kind of live by the water in Australia. After losing Nicole, getting out for a walk and just being with nature was another massive benefit. So that for me, if I'm getting a bit like icky in the headspace, it's usually when I haven't left the house all day and I'm just working away. So walking, exercising. I have like a little gratitude list that I keep and things like that. To be honest, I don't write in it every day, but I never tell myself I should do anything because it's not no upside to shooting all over yourself. I think that. but that's probably my biggest ones. But there's certainly plenty. I think it's probably like you do things that you don't even recognize as a habit. Like it's just kind of so part of who you are now that they're just like the big obvious ones that I have. But I do have my Mini Habits for Teens book. So there's a plenty of habits in there that I recommend to teens. Cause again, things that we do, like using our calendars and scheduling things and that, some teens are never taught how to do that and school doesn't really show them. So
it's the little things, though, isn't it? It's the little things, like as you said there, mm-hmm. and that's what I like what you said there. There's nothing groundbreaking about what you just said there about the habits. It's just small, simple things. Even something as simple as just shutting your laptop off by a certain time.
Yeah.
Because that's one of the biggest things. Like I know what I'm like. If I don't get a good quality night's sleep, which mm-hmm. results, let's say I'm on my laptop until 10 o'clock, and then it means I don't start getting to bed until 11 o'clock, which means I don't get sleep till 12 o'clock. Like, I can maybe do that once, but if I do that two nights in a row, it massively affects my mental health. So even just something so simple of having boundaries of, I'm not going to reply to emails, I'm not going to run my laptop at this time. I think that's such a powerful thing. So for me, everyone always laughs. If I'm ever on a date or anything, at 9 o'clock, my alarm goes off and it says, get ready for bed. So literally every day on a date, and my phone will go off and my watch will start vibrating and I'm like, fuck, I'm like,
that's so funny.
Get ready to go to bed. But for me, because I'm saying, Jeff, I don't have that. I will literally just be sat working. I literally will just sit there working. So it goes off. I'm like, oh, right, okay, actually, yeah, I've got to
start
winding down. I know what I'm like. I get carried away, as you said, self-employed. final question I ask all my guests. What advice would you give to somebody that feels stuck and out of control in their life?
What was that last part? Sorry.
Oh, sorry. What advice would you give someone that feels stuck and out of control with their life?
Oh, out of control in their life. Oh, where do we even start? I want to know the details already. Okay. What would I say? No one or no thing can take away your power to choose your response. And right now it sounds like your best response you could choose genuinely would be to reach out for help and speak to someone. Like, I cannot stress that enough. Talking to someone you trust, whether it's a friend, whether it's, a counselor, a therapist, your parents, or reach out to one of us. I know I've had some people sometimes just feel like they're in a funk and tell me what you need to get off your chest. And then usually I might be like, oh, I have an episode that I've done on this to pass along. But I think if anything, like some people, like when they hear me say, choose your response, they think I'm like, stand up like a gladiator and take on the world. Like, no, I'm just saying, like, when you're sitting there, like you can at the very least walk into the next room and put your arms around your mom and say, I need a chat, or text a friend, or sometimes for me, my dog's my therapist, I ain't gonna lie. He's dried a few tears for me. But also understanding that even as a quote unquote life coach and a motivational speaker, I still have days where I have a good cry on the couch, where I feel like I've just like got a heavy fog. I can't quite see the silver lining, or I'll read a quote and it doesn't really quite resonate with me. But knowing like this too shall pass, like I've been here before and I've gotten out of it before, so this time will be no different. I think the very worst thing to do is to get on social media and look at someone else's life and think, oh, why doesn't mine look like that? Remember, that's the real life with a double E. We're living real life, EA, that kind of real life involves days like this. So allowing space for them and then speaking to someone that you trust is like a really, really important step in choosing your response there.
Absolutely. I love that. That's something that, again, I talk about a lot. So make sure you do pick the right person, someone you actually trust, like that friend you actually do trust. And sometimes, bizarrely enough, it's not even that friend you're that close to. It's that friend that you don't talk to very often, but they've always had your back. They've always got your back and they're there. Like sometimes they're the best friends like to call upon. Mm-hmm. But I love that response, especially when it comes to social media stuff. And again, I love also what you said. You're very similar to me in that sense. I never claim to be perfect. I still have bad days. The difference is I just know myself. So I notice when I'm starting to go downhill and I've got the tools to be like, right, I'm going to nip this in the bud, not allow it to. But even some days it does get to that stage. Okay, right, get yourself out of it as quickly as possible.
Yeah.
I think that's the biggest thing. Too many people claim to be perfect and pretend they don't have bad days. And even like I said, with what we do, we still have bad days because we're human and it's a human experience. And I think it's just about time we've kind of normalized that human experience because
it's real struggle. Life. Yeah, 100%. It is. Yeah. Yeah. And I mean, my family are back in Australia. I haven't seen them in like 16 months. I miss the heck out of them. So I actually want to have days where I feel sad because the sadness comes from love. Like I am grateful. Like Winnie the Pooh has a quote, like how lucky I am to have something that makes saying goodbye so hard. And that reminds me of with my sister. But now I think how lucky I am that to have people like to miss so much. So I allow space for that and don't shame myself for it. So I think like, gosh, I think we could speak forever on all of this stuff, but I'll have to get you on my show so you can share your story and I can learn more about what you do.
No, I'd love to do that. Honestly, this has been amazing. I love connecting with people. Like I said, they're on a similar path and journey as me. And again, I've definitely taken some stuff away from this. So again, like I said in my episode, if you've taken any value from today's episode, don't forget to like and share it with a friend. Because again, I know you're taking some value on this. Like my notes, like it's just full of just things I've been jotting down while you've been talking, especially just 3 hours. So that for me has just been absolutely fantastic. Just to sort of really succinctly put that down in a nice like order of actually this we do, then this, then that. Where can people find out more information about you? So if people want to connect with you, where's your podcast? Hit us with it all so we can get it put across the bottom of the screen.
Oh, awesome. Okay. Well, kategladden.com is my website. So on there, you'll find all the different stuff about my talks, my podcasts, my books, my coaching, all that kind of stuff. But if you personally want to reach out, ask me a question, share me your favorite quote or whatever it is of your own, at Kate Gladden on Instagram is where I'm most active. So that's pretty straightforward. It's Gladden with an I, most are with an E, but I'm with an I. So that's fun. And what was the last? Oh, my podcast. So my podcast show is called OK.NowWhat? So OK Now What? With Kate Gladden. And that's on basically any of your favorite podcast apps, I imagine. Spotify, iTunes. I really don't know many beyond that. But there's like
I'm assuming that people that will be listening to this will be able to get it on. So whatever you listen to this on, it'll be on there. So make sure you subscribe.
But I love it. I literally called it OK Now What? Because I feel like you leave school and now you're like, nothing goes according to plan. You're like, OK, now what the F am I meant to do? So that's my show.
No, I absolutely love that. Honestly, this has been absolutely incredible. Thank you very much for taking the time to talk to me today.
No, thank you so much. I've had a ball.
Take care.